Hey, and welcome into the Big Ten Huddle. I'm your host, JR. We've got a lot to talk about going on in the Big Ten. I am joined tonight by Justin Adams. Justin has been here multiple times before. We always appreciate when Justin is willing to come back. With Zach leaving us for vacation, I mean, every guy needs a break, but come on, Zach. It's November football, man. We got to be talking about this stuff. So I had to bring in the ace. I had to bring in Justin Adams to talk all about it. Justin, how you been doing? I know the Cornhuskers have, you know, been on a little bit of a downturn, but it looks like things could turn around. How we feeling?
Yeah, I'm feeling cautiously optimistic. Okay. You know, it's the play calling has been pretty bad. Watching the film each and every week, I'm pulling my hair out. You know, Ohio State receiver talked about how the film had been, you know, they ran a couple of the same routes concepts against Ohio State. So yeah. But other than that, you know, other than Nebraska and the Texans stressing me out, you know, everything's been going good. The channel, Nebraska Voice of College Football, you can find me over there. You know, everything's been going well over there. Just, you know, having fun talking about football, and it's been a grind, man. So, but I'm happy to see all the success you've had here and all the growth you've had, man. I'm ready to get after it.
All right, man. Yeah, we really appreciate it. And definitely, if you are somebody that you want to know anything about Nebraska football and what goes on over there, definitely go check out Justin Adams over at the Voice of College Football Nebraska. And Justin, we'll talk other Big Ten teams and stuff like that, especially the opponents, too. So Justin's got a lot of good knowledge. That's one of the reasons why we bring him on the Big Ten Huddle. So listen, this is how I know Hoosier fans are invested in the season. We got Hoosier fans in the chat. Even on an Indiana bye week, we got Hoosier fans in the chat. Hoosiers. Also got Catch Sullivan, Hoosiers. Appreciate you, Hoosier fans. I gave you all the challenge on Sunday night, and you delivered. We even had a Husker, or not Husker fan, we even had a Hoosier fan call into our Ohio State call-in show.
Nice.
that was fun. He was talking up his team, and I had a guest on that's very pro-Ohio State. And,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, there's a little bit of arguing there. That was that was fun. So Terry, that's, if you're out there, we appreciate you calling in. And look at that, Zach says favorite podcast by far. We appreciate it, Zach. We are so glad that you like to listen. All right, before we get into it, do want to remind you the Big Ten Huddle is all about talking about all of the Big Ten. There is not a Big Ten team we won't talk about. One of the reasons why I started this very here podcast is because I noticed there were so many Big Ten podcasts, but not all of them talked about every single Big Ten team. There were Big Ten teams that were getting snuffed and things like that. And so I said, you know what? I want to talk about all of the Big Ten. And then the Big Ten decided to move to 18 teams. And I was like, wow, this is going to get more difficult. But we are still going to make it happen. So thank you to everybody who listens. And we have some good topics to talk about. Number one topic, Justin, is the rankings. The college football rankings just came out. They just came out on ESPN, Michigan State, and Kansas were doing everything they could to delay them. So that way we wouldn't be able to talk about them tonight. But we are still going to talk about them. Honestly, Justin, they don't look too different from the AP poll and what the AP poll put out. I thought Indiana might not make it into the top five, but they did it. In fact, they even put BYU over Tennessee. We're going to talk more about the Big Ten teams, but just what are your thoughts on, you know, start with the Big Ten, but if you got other thoughts on other teams, you can go ahead and touch on those as well.
Yeah, first off, I was kind of arguing on Twitter with a Tennessee fan earlier because
for that. Yes.
The question arose, if Indiana is 11-1, should they make the playoff? And I was like, if anybody says no to this, then they don't need to talk college football anymore. Should probably delete their account. And some Tennessee fan was talking about they haven't played anybody. They have been beating everybody soundly, solidly. They are a damn good team. And that is just a team that, you know, say what you will about their talent level. They're just extremely well-coached team. He coaches those guys, you know, it's production. When he attacked the portal, it was production over, you know, stars, which Deion kind of went for the talent in the portal. And Cignetti went for, you know, he had his guys that he trusted on his staff, and he went for those players that have produced and that he knew would fit a system. And so, I'm really big on Indiana. I'm happy BYU made it in over Tennessee for that guy's sake, so I can laugh at him. But I still think, you know, me personally, I like Indiana over Penn State. That's just a me thing. I don't really think Penn State, I don't see him as a top five team, in my opinion, right now. And I do see Indiana as a surefire top five team. That's just from the eye test of watching Penn State and their inconsistencies. So
where would you put Penn State at? Like 6-7 behind Tennessee?
I'd probably have Penn State around probably 6-7. I just right outside of the top five. I'd probably say, and it's, you know, because I think in a neutral field, of course, Penn State beats BYU, so maybe about six. But yeah, right now, I just think I think you could flip flop Indiana and Penn State for sure. But other than that, you know, 1 and 2 are right. I think they got those right. 3 as well. You know, Texas against Georgia. You know, I feel like they just kind of came out of rhythm, and you know, so I don't know if we got to fully see what that offense was capable of against Georgia. So I mean, I do like the way this is rounded out, except for the Penn State, except for Penn State at 4.
Yeah, I think that the teams who dropped, like Miami and Georgia, deserved to drop. I never thought Georgia was a better team than Ohio State. I watched that Alabama game, and I felt like they got too much credit for coming back in that game when Alabama's defense was more to be blamed rather than Georgia's offense doing something spectacular. And obviously, yeah, Things are falling apart in Georgia right now. I mean, yes, Kirby Smart is calling players idiots. He is talking about how he fully trusts his quarterback when he's given him no reason to fully trust him. Like, I mean, normally I'm all for backing your guy, but your guy has not been doing well.
He's smiling on the sideline while you're losing, Carson Beck. Right. Like, what? Yeah,
exactly. Like, it's just, it's a bad look. You got safeties out there. They were celebrating with the Ole Miss fans, like, oh yeah, they're my old buddies. It's like, well, they're not your buddies after they beat you. Go back to the locker room.
You just lost. Like, you got to be pissed. Like, I don't care if you're my buddy or not. If I just lost, I'm pissed.
Especially the way you lost, 28-10. Like, yikes, you know.
Yeah.
I guess you had time to dwell on it over on the sidelines. But anyway, back to the Big Ten teams. I'm okay with Indiana at 5 and Penn State at 4. I would personally probably put Indiana over Penn State as well. I think there's an argument for Indiana over Ohio State as well. If you go by resume, I don't think I agree that Indiana is the better team than Ohio State, but we'll find out next week. That's the beautiful thing about this is,
yeah,
we'll find out who is the better team, and you know, we'll be able to see that. So right now I am all for the 4 Big Ten teams in the top 5. It's funny to hear the narrative shift of the big the SEC teams, where it's, you know, for years it was, oh well, we have the best teams in the country, so we're the best conference. And yep, now that there's 4 Big Ten teams in the top 5, it's, well, depth. You know, you can't argue with the depth.
They haven't played anybody.
Yeah, exactly. Meanwhile, UCLA beats Iowa, and they're like, ha, 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 Iowa's bad. And it's like, or depth, you know, question mark, which you were just talking about.
But, yep, you know, exactly.
It's not easy to reason with the folks down south. But Justin, I do, before we move on from this, I do want to get your thoughts on if you think that these 4 Big Ten teams are indeed a lock to get into the playoffs. We just saw Georgia drop all the way from 3rd to 12th, which Justin will be back in just a second. We did just see Georgia drop all the way from 3rd to 12th. And so for me, like, that is kind of an interesting thing that a team would be, not a team, the committee would be so willing to drop a team that low off of one loss. Now, granted, for Georgia, it is their second loss, and they did so in a fashion that was obviously rather embarrassing. We just talked about that. However, if Indiana does lose to Ohio State, then the argument could be made. They never had a good schedule, all this stuff. I don't think that argument is accurate, me personally. I think that you need to go with the team that has been performing all season, and I think the schedule stuff gets overblown sometimes, right? I think sometimes we just go too much into the schedule and say, like, oh, well, this team only beat this team who has this record and yada, yada, yada. Let's look at the play on the actual field. How has Indiana played on the actual field? If you look at what they did to Michigan, Michigan is a good running team. They're not great, but they're a good running team. That's the strength of their offense. And what what they were able to do to confuse that offensive line, get in the middle and show guys, you know, the gaps, but then also fill the gaps immediately right away. I think you have an argument there that Kalel Mullins didn't play, and that was a big factor. But still, Indiana's defensive line was able to do so many things against Michigan that it really confused them and made it difficult on them. Let's go ahead and get some comments really fast while we see if Justin can reconnect. Philip says SEC teams playing in the snow, great home field advantage. That is honestly one of the best parts about this, in my mind, is is these SEC teams having to come to Penn State, Ohio State, Oregon, Indiana, whoever is there. They, in the College Football Playoff prediction show rankings tonight, they had Alabama going to Indiana to play. Boy, what a treat that would be to see the big bad Alabama have to go all the way to Bloomington and play there. That would be a treat to watch that happen. Sean says Penn State best win is Illinois, and I think that has to be considered as well, and I think that probably is what has Penn State over Indiana, although Penn State does have the one loss. It is similar to Ohio State's situation, where the one loss was a close game against a team that is number two in the nation. Here we go. We got Justin back. Justin, back from the dead. We're glad you're here.
My camera just like disconnected from Chrome and wouldn't come back on, so I had to switch to Firefox. I have no idea what just happened.
All right. Well, we talked through the top four, so we're going to go ahead and move on. We really got to stay on track time-wise tonight, people. We got a lot of stuff to talk about. Our next thing to talk about is Penn State and Purdue. Now, we're going to do a preview a little bit different tonight. What we're going to do is Justin and I are each going to give one mistake that each team cannot make in tonight's game. So we'll start with Penn State. Justin, what is your one mistake Penn State cannot do against Purdue?
Yep, and we kind of talked about this beforehand. That we have very similar things. They need to just avoid letting Purdue hang around. I think one of the biggest things is just make sure that they attack offensively, and they need to prove themselves, right? They need to prove consistency. They need to come out and they need to perform in a way that makes you feel like they beat Purdue in the way they should. And they haven't done that with a lot of teams this year. So I think this is a statement game for them to come out and be like, yeah, we do belong, as much as they can prove that against Purdue. But if you let Purdue hang in there, it's not going to go well for you according to the eye test in that regard. So yeah, I think that's the biggest thing.
Yeah, for me, I had don't play around with Purdue, right? Play against the perception. Don't play against Purdue. We have a common opponent now between Ohio State and Oregon and Penn State. Ohio State beat them 45-0. Oregon beat them 35-0. Indiana's going to play them here soon. So this is going to be one of the only common opponents. It's not a great common opponent, but still, you have to show dominance against this team. Yes. And let's be honest, this is a dead team walking in Purdue. This is not a very good football team. This is a team that is going to be disrespected for the rest of the season. And, you know, that's kind of what my mistake has to do with, where my mistake for Purdue is just fire Ryan Walters already. I mean, we talked about it in the one episode where it was like, we kind of understand maybe not firing coaches as quickly now. I have a theory that like with the pain of the players from the school, maybe you save some of that and you don't pay the buyouts as much. I have that theory a little bit, but this is not a big buyout. Ryan Walters is a bad coach. He's done everything he can. Credit to him. He's done everything he can with calling plays and doing all that kind of stuff, but he's just a bad coach. You can't say, oh, he's got a good recruiting class coming in. You can't say, oh, you got these young players. There is something respectable about a 4-8 record, a 5-7 record, where it's like, we saw some promise, we'll give you another year. You saw no promise this year. Zero FBS wins. Ryan Walters has got to go. Do not keep Ryan Walters around after this game. Fire him right after the game. The Monday press conference should not have Ryan Walters there. What do you think?
Unbelievable. Justin? It's unbelievable he's still there. I mean, we kind of predicted this offseason. I mean, Ryan Walters, in my opinion, I've never thought he was a good head football coach. I just didn't think he was going to fit in there. I have an animosity. It's Nebraska fans, we have animosity towards Ryan Walters. There's a little bit there, but you know, just overall, like it's just kind of like you said, you're 1-8, right? You even go back to last year, some of the worst Nebraska teams I've seen, and I've seen abysmal football, but 1-8, like that's indefensible. And the fact that he still has a job right now is the fact that he coaches at Purdue probably is the one reason that it is that. But it's a matter of, you know, who steps into the interim and who does Purdue go get. But I don't think right now in the age of the NIL and modern college football, I do think there's an urgency too, because you're in an arms race of a new Big Ten and you don't want to get lost in that shuffle and fall out of all the recruiting, you know, races. Cause this offseason he did have a top 30 recruiting class. Mm-hmm. And so you don't want to, you know, start to lose those things. So maybe it's, if you do, you know, change out that staff, you do want to get them on the road and talking to those recruits and get them out and talking to the people who are committed. So hopefully they got a plan in place, but right now it's not looking good. It's pretty late in the season to start thinking about that and talking about that. So
yeah, was that your mistake to avoid too? Was don't keep Ryan Walters?
So I was just kind of bouncing it off of what you said, but
no, you're good. I
think they have to avoid holding on to the ball too long. I just think they have to get quick hitting routes, get in a rhythm, because the longer they hold on to that ball, the more Penn State's going to get after them with the pass rush. And that's going to be a really, really bad day. And so you just got to do whatever you can to get rhythm throws, quick throws, get the ball moving as much as you can, and try to just take, limit some of those pass rushers. That's one of, you know, maybe get those pass rushers kind of pinning their ears back and try to get some runs up the middle. It's going to be a long day for Purdue though.
Yeah. It's going to be troublesome. There could be some things they could do to maybe look respectable, but at the end of the day, Abdul Carter is going to be a menace. I would not be surprised if he has 2 or 3 sacks in this game, at least. Could be more than that.
Agreed. So.
All right, Justin, let's go ahead. Don't worry, Dylan. I saw you wanted us to skip that game, so we're going through quick. All right. We got Rutgers and Maryland. Maryland is favored in this one by 6.5 over Rutgers. The over-under on this one is 50.5. Oh, I forgot score prediction. Let's do score prediction really fast.
Oh, yeah.
Score prediction for Penn State and Purdue. My score prediction is 38-3. What's your score prediction, Justin?
I've got 35-7.
35-7.
Okay.
All right, now let's move on.
Score a touchdown on the scripted driver late.
Yeah, something like that. All right, Rutgers and Maryland. Like I said, Maryland favored in this one. Rutgers is coming off the big win. Maryland is coming off competing against Oregon, but of course Oregon pulled ahead late, so there is a little bit of promise there, but we've seen this story before from Maryland, right? We've seen Maryland battle with a team late in the season, and they come back after that, and it's same old with Maryland. So Justin, what is your key? Let's start with Rutgers. What is your key mistake to avoid for Rutgers?
Rutgers' entire offensive system under Kirk Ciarrocca is about playing off of your run game. And one of the things that they have to do, and this was my key when they played Nebraska, that Nebraska needed to do was get out to an early lead, preferably a couple digits, and turn Ethan Calick-Manis into a pocket passer. And if you can do that, you can control Rutgers pretty easily. And so I think that's what it's going to be from them, is just limit that run game, force Calick-Manis to be a pocket passer. And that's how you, that's been the success on beating Rutgers this year. It's just the way Ciarrocca likes to run his offense, he likes to run the run action pass and the RPOs off of those kind of outside zone concepts. And he likes to bring the same exact looks in terms of blocking, but he'll run an RPO instead of an outside zone, but everything's going to look similar. He's good at that. But if you bring them out of that and turn him into a pocket passer, he's not going to be able to run those systems that Kirk Ciarrocca really thrives off of. So that's my key for them.
Yeah, good game from Ethan Calick-Manis this last week against Minnesota. Minnesota came in with a really good pass defense,
yeah.
And it was a great job by Ethan Calick-Manis to overcome that. My key in this one is actually going to be in the run game. I want to see Rutgers run to the outside a lot. I felt like they had a good amount of success against Minnesota in that game. And honestly, Maryland, even though they're not the most skilled defensive tackles in the world, I got two pretty big dudes in the middle there, both 315 pounds or more sitting there in the middle. So it's going to be really hard to run the ball up the gut, especially if you don't have Kyle Manungai. We'll see what happens there. I know Bailey is out for the season, but I think there's still a question that Manungai could come back. But even if it's not him, I want to see them get outside the tackles, run to the outside. There's been a good amount of success by Oregon and USC doing the same thing against Maryland this season. So, and I think you have to have that run game. I think they got away without the run game as much against Minnesota, but I think Calick-Manis is a quarterback who needs to stay on schedule. So, and I like Dymier Miller. I like Ian Strong, but what we saw from them against Minnesota is not what you're going to see for the entire season. That was a good game they had, but it's not a reliable thing that they're going to do all season. All right, Justin, let's go to Maryland for your critical mistake they must avoid.
Maryland is self-inflicted errors. I mean, too many drops by the wide receivers, too many turnovers. You know, Maryland does have the ability to put up points, and they do have athletes, and talk about Felton, he's been incredible this year, and it's just a matter of, last week, just way too many drops, couple turnovers. And for them to, against Rutgers, they're going to need to come out and they're going to need to put up, points early, in my opinion. And kind of like you were talking about, to take them out of that run. And so for them, they can't let Rutgers hang around by turning the ball over. They need to really kind of put their foot down and kind of put them away, because Rutgers can be physical. And they can potentially give Maryland some problems if they don't. So I think Maryland just needs to play a very clean game.
Yep, I agree. For me, the thing they have to avoid is overcomplicating or just not executing on third down. That's been a huge thing for Maryland this season, their inability to convert on third down, especially when they're having Billy Edwards drop back to pass. Listen to these numbers for Billy Edwards on third down. 60% passing, 7 yards per attempt, 0 passing TDs, 3 interceptions, 6 sacks. He's ran it a little bit, but not very well. Those numbers are pretty bad because of the sacks and stuff like that. But he has 1 rushing TD on third down. It's not been good. On third and goal, he's 0-for-2 in passing with 2 sacks. So yeah. It's not good on third down. They have got to figure out something to do. I feel like sometimes they try to get a little bit too cute with what they're doing on third down. Just go with all reliable. Billy Edwards has got to find somebody reliable that he can throw to on third down, and just don't overcomplicate it. Just run your offense, make it happen, especially in those longer situations. But again, you can't have a running game where you're getting into 3rd and 7, 3rd and 6 all the time. You have to get into 3rd and 4 or less to help Billy Edwards out.
Yeah. And the way Rutgers defense works, they like, you know, what they lack in speed, they like to funnel guys to other players. So that's one thing too. Maryland needs to operate in space and not let them do that. Not let the Rutgers defense funnel them where they want them to go.
Yeah, totally agree. Totally agree. Let's go with score predictions on this one. Justin, I'll let you go first again. Maryland Rutgers score prediction.
Yeah, I'm actually going to take Rutgers in this one. I'm going to take Rutgers. I'm going to say, I'm going to go 24-21.
That's honestly, I had the same exact thing. And no. I said, whatever Justin picks, I'm going to go with the opposite team. So I'm going to go with Maryland in this one, 24-21. All right. I could see maybe another field goal, maybe making it 27-24, something like that. But I think we're going to be around that reach. I think this will be a very close game. I think if you are looking for a game to watch and there's something close, I think this is going to be one of those games that you're going to want to tune into just to see, you know, a good game at the end of it where two teams are close.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, all right. Hey, we're going to hit a commercial really fast, and then we're going to come back and talk about Michigan State and Illinois. I see a lot of Husker chat in the chat. Don't worry. We will get to Nebraska and USC. There's a lot to talk about in that game. So we'll be right back. Stay with us. Have you ever wanted to watch all 22 film, you know, that film the coaches watch? Well, now you can. Introducing the Coaches Film Room. Over at Minutes to Sports, former college coach Zach Smith breaks down film of the most relevant teams in college football with a bit of a Big Ten lead. It's not free, so you'll need to sign up for the Colonel tier, which is $25 a month, but I can attest to you that it is far more worth it than that. With about 4 to 8 games per week, this is worth so much more money, not to mention Zach's analysis making you a smarter football fan. Go check it out. The links are in the description, minutesofsports.com. You won't be sorry. Back here on the Big Ten Huddle, we appreciate all of you sticking with us. We do want to remind you to please do like and subscribe. It helps the podcast and everything going on YouTube. And if you're not watching on YouTube, if you're listening on podcasts, give us a 5-star rating. Let everybody know that the Big Ten does have podcasts as well. Honestly, there's a ton of SEC podcasts out there. That's one of the reasons why the SEC has done such a good job with promoting their teams, is because they have so much media out there. Heck, they got ESPN in their entire back pocket. So, I mean, help us out. Let's get some good Big Ten content out there. Remind people there's good teams in the Big Ten as well. All right, Justin, let's talk about Michigan State. I should probably change the graphic to Michigan State. That would help. Let's talk about Michigan State and Illinois. Now, Illinois was kind of a darling of the Big Ten. They were ranked and they beat Nebraska, but then they came back and they lost they lost to Penn State. So that kind of derailed things a little bit, but they started to win again. They beat Michigan. Things were looking good. And in the past 2 weeks, they were down a little bit. They lost 2 games in a row. And so now they're trying to get back on a little bit of a turn here. They are favored in this one by 2.5. It's a little bit closer of an odds than I thought there would be. But let's start with Michigan State, Justin. Michigan State has got to figure something out. 4 wins so far on the season. If they want to be bowl eligible, they have got to win this game. This is one of the games they have left that they can win. What mistake does Michigan State need to avoid?
I think they just need to avoid turning the ball over. Illinois' defense, when they were winning, was very, very opportunistic. And so Michigan getting off the field on third down, Illinois likes to sustain drives. They really like to bring heavy sets, and they like to use the H-back in a myriad of different ways. I did a film review a long time, a little while back after we played them, on the way they like to operate, but they bring things out of the same formation. And so Michigan State is, you know, going to have to make sure that they try to keep their defense off the field as much as possible, and get off the field on third down, avoid the turnovers. I think that's going to be the key, because Illinois, if Illinois can get you on your heels, that's when they have success.
Yeah, it's very close to mine, actually close to my Illinois one as well. But for me, Michigan State, they have got to avoid being afraid to sell out against the run. I know Luke Altmyer has had a good season, but honestly, ever since that Nebraska game, he's not been nearly as dominant as he was. He had that game against Penn State, which wasn't bad. I still think he did okay, but the offensive line kind of failed him in that one. And so for me, Michigan State, they have got to not let Illinois' rushing attack beat them. Michigan State has won their four games when they stopped the run. Teams have averaged less than 100 yards rushing per game in those four games that they won. And if you take out Caleb Johnson's 175-yard touchdown run that they had against him, they've averaged less than 75 yards per game against Michigan State when they've run. And like I said, Luke Altmyer, since Nebraska, he's been sacked four times per game and only has one game with multiple touchdown passes. That game was against Purdue, so not exactly the best defense in the world he was facing. I still think Luke Altmyer is a talented quarterback. I'm not saying sleep on him by any means, but you got to roll with what you've been seeing lately. And what I've been seeing is Michigan State does better when teams are not running all over them. And if Luke Altmyer is not going to take over throwing the ball, you've got to figure out a way to stop the run, and you got to make Luke Altmyer beat you with the pass. All right, let's go to Illinois, Justin. What is your mistake to avoid for Illinois?
I counter that with Illinois needs to establish a run. they need to establish their game plan, run the ball, and set up their offense, because everything works as an extension of their run game. I think what really hurt them was losing, I can't believe I'm drawing a blank on his name. I've talked about him so much. Their running back, who's like...
Oh, McCray.
No, their starter who went out.
Was it Fagan? No.
Caden Fagan.
Okay, I keep getting mixed up because one of them transferred to Purdue. Was it Love? Love transferred to Purdue.
Yeah, Caden Fagan, because he was a big part of that. I mean, he's a big dude, and he was just, you know, while they weren't averaging a ton of, you know, yards per carry, it turned into chunk plays. Like against Nebraska at the end, towards the later part of the game, they were just kind of establishing that run game. They got Nebraska on their heels with the quick passing game. So yeah, everything's going to come off of that run. That's going to be their best route to victory, is just trying to get that going. Yeah. Luke Altmyer, as good as he is, there are limitations, and he does need, the system to kind of be working towards his strengths.
Yeah. No, I think that's good. Exactly what I was saying about Michigan State. So it's going to be a battle there in the run game. So I'm going to counter your Michigan State needs to not turn the ball over with Illinois has got to be super aggressive in this game, trying to get turnovers. I don't care if Michigan State gets a big play here and there. I think that Illinois' offense is going to be able to score on Michigan State's defense enough that you can afford giving up a big play here and there. You have got to be super opportunistic. That was one of the reasons why Illinois was able to defeat Nebraska, because they were able to get turnovers in that game. It was huge for them, and honestly, that's been how Illinois has won a lot of these games. They had zero turnovers forced against Minnesota, and only one against Oregon, and that one was when it was already 35-9 in the game, so it didn't really do all that much for you. But they're averaging more than two takeaways per game in the games that they win. So if you're Illinois, you've got to figure out a way to get this opportunistic defense, whether it's interceptions, fumbles, whatever it is, you've got to figure out ways to force turnovers on a team on Michigan State that has been very prone to turning the ball over this year in multiple different ways. So got to figure that out if you want to get the win. Justin, what is your score prediction for this game?
Yeah, I'm going to say 28-17, Illinois.
28-17. All right, let me find mine really fast. I had, oh my, where is it at? There it is. Mine in this one was 27-17, and I think that Illinois is going to take this one. So much respect to Michigan State. We're
almost identical there too.
I know, right? I think they do have some good players, but I think Illinois is going to find the turnovers in this one.
Yeah.
And, they're going to be able to run the ball.
Pretty well-coached team.
Yeah, yeah. I've been singing Brett Bielema's praises. I think that he's done a really good job.
Absolutely.
With Illinois. So, all right, let's move on to the next game here, Justin. We have Ohio State at Northwestern. Well, kind of at Northwestern. It's at Wrigley Field in this one. This is going to be an interesting game to watch. I've watched the Wrigley Field games in the past, and they're kind of fun to see, but it kind of goes into my mistake that Ohio State needs to avoid, which is just don't get anybody hurt. All right, yeah. Ohio State should smack Northwestern. And I'm not trying to be disrespectful to Northwestern, but Ohio State should come in. They should play Northwestern very tough and beat them down. And once that starts happening, get those starters out as soon as possible. You almost had Will Howard and your left guard, Carson Hensman, injured against Purdue. That would have been heartbreaking in a game that they really didn't even – I think Ohio State could have won that game with their backups. If you would have got your quarterback and another offensive lineman hurt for Ohio State, that would have been detrimental to the season, would have been very bad. So Ohio State – with how close the walls are to the end zone, with the sod and what they've been doing with the infield and how that has looked the past few years, that they played the game, just get in there, get up by two or three scores, put the backups in, and let them take care of it. You know, if I'm Ryan Day in this one, two, three scores is enough for me to put the backups in and say, ride them to victory. We don't need a 30-point win in this one. Just win by 20, win by, you know, even 14 is okay. Yeah. Don't injure the starters. What do you think, Jess?
Yeah, I think one of the things for Ohio State, because, you know, when prepping for the Nebraska game, I watched the Ohio State offensive film versus the Iowa defense. And what they did well in that game was they come out with a variation of different runs, but they run them out of the pistol. They run them out of the offset. And what they do is they'll set everything up off of that. You know, the using motions to come across to manipulate how many defenders you have in the box or manipulate players away from the play, or you have your blind blocking like it's a run going to the right and you move the pocket left and you pass it out on a little dump pass, taking the underneath and then setting up the explosive play. So I think just they need to avoid going away from what works for them. And I think they just need to get after attacking the run game, get those motions going to get the defenders flowing away from the play, you know, get what Will Howard into his rhythm throws. And I think they control the game from there.
I agree. What's your Northwestern don't do?
Avoid the explosive play. Your best hope in this is to shorten the game and try not to let Ohio State put up points, you know, in bunches. You know, you're going to want to keep everything in front of you and try to get off the field on third down. That's the only hope to keep this close.
Yeah. I went a little bit of a different direction. I figured, you know, assuming this is a blowout, like I think it's going to be with Northwestern, don't run Jack Lausch too much. Okay. Don't try to play hero ball. I mean, Ohio State has already injured three starting quarterbacks so far this season. They hit hard and they are going out for blood. I mean, how amped they are, and they are going to try and be amped for the Indiana game and everything going on. So,
yeah,
I mean, I'm not saying that they're out there targeting quarterbacks or anything like that, but just what they've been trying to do with how hard they've been playing this year. Quarterbacks have been getting injured against Ohio State, and just protect Jack Lausch. He is your future at Northwestern. Yes. You need to, you know, keep him safe in this one. So, all right, my score prediction in this one, I actually think that Ohio State is going to do the thing where they put the backups in a little bit earlier. So I can see this maybe not being as big of a blowout as I anticipate it might be. So I'm going to go 38-10. I think Northwestern does get a late time touchdown. They also get a field goal, and Ohio State scores a little bit with their backups, but for the most part, it's a pretty snoozer game in my mind. What do you think, Justin?
Yeah, I have a 42-13. So same spread. But yeah, I think similar to lead to what you said, I think Ohio State can pull out to a lead and get some guys out of the game. And yeah, I find it hard to give Northwestern 13, but I feel like they might just be able to sneak some in against the backups or something.
Yeah. Tony is saying, do you think the Badgers win? We will get to the Badgers as our last game. We have Washington, UCLA, Nebraska, USC, and then we'll talk about Oregon, Wisconsin. So hang with us, Tony. We'll talk Badgers and Ducks. No worries. Oh, that's quite the battle there. I didn't even think about that. The Badgers and Ducks battle. All right. I don't know
if he's going to like my pick.
Let's talk some UCLA and Washington in this one. It's a home game for Washington. Washington has been much better at home than they've been on the road this season. So Washington does have that in favor. However, they did just get completely blown out, and fans are starting to question the quarterback situation for Washington and what they need to do. Jed Fish did say after the game that they would start Will Rogers. And I don't think he was lying about that. I think that is the plan, but for me, in this one, if Will Rogers comes out and starts throwing interceptions and maybe not looking so hot again, you have got to not be too careful about putting Damond Williams in the game. I know that it's one of those things where, like, Will Rogers, actually, he hasn't been bad this season. They've had penalties and they've been not so great in the red zone at times. And so things like that have kind of held back the numbers. But I feel like Will Rogers has been pretty good. But you have got to get Damon Williams ready. He's a freshman. You have got to keep him happy. And what's Washington playing for this season? I'm not trying to be disrespectful, but what are they really playing for? At this point, a bowl game? Like, I mean, I get it. You want to go to a bowl game. But for me, I think it'd be better to give Damon Williams the snaps, show him that they believe in him as the future of this team. And I hate it for Will Rogers, man. I want Will Rogers to have a good end to his senior year. And I get that it's senior night and everything. But, I mean, I feel like you got to go with Damon Williams if Will Rogers starts to struggle. So you can't be afraid to go to him. What's your thing to avoid for Washington?
For Washington, for me, you know, when they've struggled, like against Rutgers, they put up a ton of yards, like you said, just ineffective in the red zone, and they didn't convert on third down. 2 for 12 against Rutgers in the red zone, or on third down. And their special teams is not very good, not very consistent. So just to narrow it down to one thing, though, I'm going to say take advantage of your opportunities. You know, take advantage of your opportunities in the red zone, because, you know, UCLA showed against Nebraska that they can be sneaky if you let them. They will be sneaky. If you don't take advantage of opportunities, you know, they get some confidence. And I don't want to talk about that game too much, but I think that's the biggest thing for Washington. Just take advantage of the opportunities when you get them. Because like I said, their field goal kicking has been inconsistent. So you need to get points when you get down to field. If you have 500 yards, scoring 17 points isn't going to cut it. So take advantage of those opportunities and limit your mistakes.
Yeah, I read a post from a Washington fan the other day on one of their message boards, and he had done the statistical analysis and said that the field goal kicker this year at Washington is the worst field goal kicker they've ever had in the 21st century. So
he was 1 for 4 in the game against Rutgers, I believe, yeah, or it was either Rutgers or Purdue, but he's 1 for 4. Yeah, it's bad. He was 1 for 4 the same week Nebraska went 1 for 4.
So. Yeah, it was not good. So actually not been very good all season. So there have been a couple games here and there where he's done well, but it's not a good situation. So, all right, let's talk UCLA. Justin, I'll let you go first on UCLA here. That way I don't steal your pick, because we might have the same pick. I'm not sure, but you go ahead.
Well, just with UCLA for me, you know, what they need to avoid, and I think is just getting out of, you know, what they did against Nebraska. I think they stuck to their game plan effectively, and I think they just need to do that. I think UCLA is a team that has one way to win, and that's with the game plan that they brought out against Nebraska. It was a very simple yet effective game plan, and it worked. And I think as long as they stick to what they do, I don't think there's a lot of variation in this offense. I don't think it's a lot, but what you know, Garbers was able to do is he was, you know, just attacking the void in the defense, in cover two, he was just attacking those little areas in the void, just taking what the defense was giving him, wasn't trying to do too much. And just kept moving the ball down the field and scoring. I just think UCLA needs to stick to that, try to find holes in the defense, exploit those different coverages, because they're not going to have an advantage against most teams in terms of talent. So they got to exploit them with the X's and O's.
Yeah. I think that's a really good thought there, and it kind of goes into mine, which is don't abandon the run game too early.
Yeah.
This has been a hard part for UCLA throughout the season, is the run game and them not being able to get very much. But the past 2 weeks, TJ Harden has done better. He had his best game averaging yards per carry this last game, 6.3. It was the first time he got over 4.2, which 4.2 is how many he had in the game against UCLA, or in the game against Nebraska. So he's been steadily getting better the past 2 weeks, and I think that you have got to let him run and try to get as much yards as he can. And they've kind of dropped off from him at about 10 or 11 carries if the run game isn't going well. I don't think you can do that against Washington, because Washington, even though things did not look good against Penn State, I do think they have an okay pass defense, and I think that pass defense will be able to hinder Will Rogers or Damon Williams, especially will be able to hinder Ethan Garbers. And so especially in this situation, you got to make sure you're sticking with the run, and things will open up eventually. Just keep trying it. You saw it against Iowa in particular. Your offensive line can run block. You can make it happen. So that's my thing to avoid there. Justin, we'll start with you for score prediction. What you got?
So I've been back and forth on this one, but I think I'm going to go Washington 28, UCLA 20.
Washington 28, UCLA 20. I think in this one, all the numbers suggest Washington should win. I mean, you look at Washington's numbers. They have very good numbers this season. What kills them is the red zone conversion. What kills them is the penalties and all those things. I think because Washington is at home, they're going to win this one. I would not be surprised if UCLA gives them their first loss at home this season.
Me neither.
But I do think that Washington will win this one. The home field advantage is going to be huge for them. They're playing for a bowl game. They know in 2 weeks they're going against Oregon. I think it's at Oregon. And that one, that's going to be, you know, a very hard opportunity to get to a bowl game in. So I think they're going to win this one. I think they're going to win it. I would say probably 24-17. I think they'll probably win it. I don't know if I see them getting past 24 points against UCLA with the way their run defense has been playing. But we'll see.
I couldn't give them a field goal just because, you know, when I was predicting Nebraska scores, I was trying my best not to give them field goals because I know we're not capable of kicking them. So Washington's right there in the same boat. So,
well, they that's been interesting because they've talked about it on almost every game. Like, oh, Jed Fish can't go for a field goal here, but he still trots him out there. Like,
yeah, he does. Yeah.
Even though it's like, man, can you hit a field goal? He still trots him out there. So, I mean, maybe they trot him out there five times and he hits one. I don't know.
Hey, UCLA, there's your trick. Just keep him out of the end zone, man. You just make him, if they're going to roll him out there, try to force him out there as much as possible. Just don't let him beat you over the top.
Exactly.
Make him kick three.
Exactly. LFG is giving me some compliments here, so I got to bring that on screen. He says, JR has good instincts. Two times earlier this season, the Huskies QB2 came in and gave Washington a spark. Yeah, I think almost anything would have given the offense a spark against Penn State. So
yeah, true. Yeah. True.
I'll take it, though. I'll take
good
it.
Good point.
And then Phillip, very true. UCLA is sneaky. Yes. They are playing much better football now than they were at the beginning of the season. That's one of the reasons why I said, like, the numbers suggest Washington, because UCLA was not as good at the beginning of the season. But, boy, they had a tough schedule this year, man. UCLA, at the beginning of the season, we were talking one of their only wins might be Indiana.
Well, yeah, no, it's crazy.
When one of your easiest games on the schedule, we thought, was is now a team that's 10-0. It's like
number five team in the country. Yeah, it's a little... This has been a crazy year. Let's just put it that way.
It has. Jeffrey and I were talking about that on the last show about, like, this year is like putting 2007 to bed.
You know, my God, dude, this has been nutty. It's just so much chaos going on this year.
Yeah, exactly. All right, everybody, we are going to hit another commercial break really fast, and then we'll talk Nebraska, USC. We'll get into Dana Holgorsen, Jaden Maiava, all that stuff, and then we'll talk about the big game, Oregon, Wisconsin, right after that. So stay with us. We'll be right back. Homefield is your go-to destination for premium collegiate apparel with a passion for comfort and a flair for vintage design. Homefield brings you gear that is comfortable and stylish. With over 150 colleges to choose from, Homefield digs deep into the archives, uncovering forgotten logos, iconic mascots, and legendary moments to create one-of-a-kind apparel. Use my code TBTH for 15% off for new customers, or use my link in the description. Back here on the Big Ten Huddle, we appreciate everybody being with us. Hey, check out the basketball channel. We got basketball episodes on Thursday nights. If you are a basketball fan, I know there's many IU fans that watch this show. So if you enjoy basketball, as I'm sure many of you IU fans do, please check that out. You can go to the link that's in the description. We also live stream those shows here on this channel. So if you're subscribed here, you won't miss it. But it is nice to have more subscribers over on the basketball-centric channel where we do game recaps and all that stuff. So go subscribe over there. We really appreciate it. All right. I'm going to let you kind of lead this one, Justin. I feel like I have a little bit of thoughts on Holgorsen and what's going on, but I think that, you know, you've obviously watched this team all season. You kind of know more of what the need was to bring Holgorsen in with Satterfield, which, you know, my biggest thing was the press conference when he didn't know how many yards per play. I was like, oh my gosh, that's fireball right there.
And you might have missed the part where he said, I'm starting to learn that you need to establish the run to win in the Big Ten. In the same press conference. I'm like, are you kidding me?
I heard about that. I didn't see that clip, but I heard he questioned something about like the run in the Big Ten. I was like, yeah, that's so cringe. Yeah.
He's been living under a rock, apparently.
Well, good news. Dana Holgorsen is here to save Nebraska. Tell me, what is your thing? I assume it's something about Holgorsen. What is your thing to avoid for Nebraska?
Yeah, well, for me, it's for Nebraska, it's avoiding the setting up only deep routes and avoiding this. It's hard to just say avoid one thing because it's a myriad of things that have caused the offensive issues. And what Satterfield hasn't done is he hasn't adjusted his offense at all. There's no identity to the offense. And so it looks like he's throwing darts at a play sheet week to week. There's no specific running back rotation. It doesn't make sense. And you're moving Raiola around and running, you know, 30-yard routes down the field with no checkdowns on second and 10, third and 10, and leaving him in constant third and longs, et cetera. You know, for Holgorsen, what his offenses do well is, you know, with the wider splits in the air raid, and I hear people talk about the air raid as this, you know, just passing attack. That's nonsense. At West Virginia 2016, one of his teams averaged over 200 yards on the ground. So he has, you know, it's the modern college football's balance, right? And he's adapted the air raid to be balanced, to be more balanced. And with that, you know, comes, you know, a little bit wider splits from your offensive linemen. And you also, like, the whole goal of his offense is to spread the field out as much as possible and make the defenders cover grass. You want to be able to get your playmakers in space and get rhythm throws. So it's going to be, it's avoiding keeping the ball in Raiola's hand for too long. Right now, he just needs to get in a rhythm. I feel like he's kind of seeing ghosts back there, you know, with a quarterback, calm feet equal calm mind. And right now, you can tell by the feet that he's not calm up here. He's seeing ghosts. When you start to throw picks to linebackers, that means you're not seeing the field very well. So put him in a situation to get rhythm throws and establish some kind of run game off of it. Get those plays going to the outside, so that way you open up that middle of the run game that the air raid is notorious for, and have those wide splits and be able to take advantage of that different element. But it's basically simplifying a lot of, just because you can't come in here and rework the entire offense. So he just needs to simplify a lot of the things for Dylan. All right. Right now, things are too complex and we're having execution issues all over the place. Our receivers aren't getting separations. Our route concepts are completely just, it's like they're seeing on film everything we're doing. The screens are getting blown up in the backfield. Anything laterally, not working. What he likes to do is he likes to attack and scheme up, you know, guys to get open, multiple guys to get open. And then just, it's just putting your playmakers in a situation to succeed. And Satterfield hasn't done that. Satterfield has just kind of played blindly, ran his offense, but it's never had an identity. It's never been a run first offense, but it's also never been a pass first offense. It's just very unpredictable what we do. It's reliant on the explosive plays. We have not been able to methodically drive down the field. There's no rhyme or reason to the running back rotation. If Holgorsen can come in and just kind of bring that into a little bit more of a simplified offense, then Nebraska can score points. Stop trying to get it all in one play. Stop trying to drop back and throw 30 yards, 40 yards every time Dylan gets the ball. Establish the run. Let him manage the game.
I agree. My thing with Dana Holgorsen is keep up the tempo, right? We've seen tempo from Holgorsen over the years with pretty much every stop he's been at. And I think that a tempo offense would really help Dylan Raiola in this one, because I totally agree. I think he's thinking too much. I think that he is trying to inspect the defense too much and every single throw. And then it turns into exactly what you said. He's seen ghosts. And for me, just give Dylan Raiola his play, let him go, let him work and do some of this quick stuff that you were talking about, you know, under the knee stuff to just get it to your playmakers and what they can do. And Nebraska does have good receivers. I mean, early on in the season, I was very much so in favor. One of the reasons why I felt like the interception that Illinois had against Nebraska was such a big play is because Nebraska does have really good receivers. And I was surprised that the DB was able to take that ball away from, I forget which receiver that was.
Isaiah Nair.
Yeah, Nair. And so for me, like, it's been kind of interesting to see the downward trend of throwing to the receivers, but I think that it's still there. I think that Nebraska has hungry players. I think a bowl game really would mean a lot to them. I think it would mean a lot to Matt Rhule and the program, and so I think they're going to be playing very hard for that in this one, and by evidence of bringing Holgorsen in, because Matt Rhule could have just, like, he could have just mailed it in and said, we'll bring Holgorsen next year. But no, he really wants that bowl game. He wants to make it happen, not just for the players, but for the fans as well. The fans are starting to question Rhule a little bit. I don't think it's valid as much as maybe some think.
He's not even close. Like, I have not changed my opinion on Rhule. I love what he's doing. Nebraska just flipped Dawson Merritt from Alabama today.
Exactly.
So, you know, the things behind the scenes, that's usually the indication that people are still buying into the vision. What we're seeing out here is not what was happening behind the scenes, and what Matt Rhule has done for that culture is what's been the
biggest
thing.
And we talked about that after the Indiana game, where I was like, folks, if you're a Nebraska fan, like, don't get mad at Rhule on this one. You know, let him figure it out, because Rhule's a smart coach. I thought the Satterfield hire from the beginning was a little questionable, and I'm thankful he's moved on from it, because I think that that was really what they needed to do most of all. So, all right. Oh, and the other thing I wanted to point out, you were talking about air raid. All right. Listen, people, if you hear somebody talking about air raid and saying, oh, air raid is just throwing the ball 80% of the time, please know this person does not understand what they are speaking about. And I'm not trying to act like I'm the biggest schematic guy in the world. Okay. I'm not one that's going to go break down film and stuff like that. I'm not the biggest schematic guy in the world, but I know enough to know that when somebody says, oh, an air raid offense is 80% of the time they're throwing the ball, how many people have called Phil Longo air raid? You know how many times percentage wise, Phil Longo runs the ball game? 52%.
Yep.
He can't be air raid if he's running it that often, or maybe he has air raid concepts that he's working in with, like you said, a balanced attack, because that's what you need in today's game of college football. So
they evolve, schemes evolve, right? And maybe at you know, some points they may have thrown 80% of the time, but you're not going to win a lot of games doing that.
Right. Exactly. All right. So let's talk about USC. USC has Jaden Maiava. The sanctions came down this week. I don't think that's really going to impact the game. If you think it does, Justin, I'd love to hear your thoughts on that. But I think that really the bigger thing here is Maiava, Lincoln Riley coaching. I wouldn't say he's coaching for his job, but he's coaching for perception amongst the fans, because the fans are obviously not happy with the way this season has gone. Maybe Maiava could be their saving grace. I'm not sure, but what is your critical mistake that USC has to avoid?
Yeah, for me, I think it's just turning for them. It's taking advantage of opportunities, and they haven't done that. And they've also, you know, killed themselves with penalties time after time. And so I think for them, it's going to be a matter of getting Maiava into a rhythm. I watched his some of his 2023 film. I have some UNLV film of his. I watched the Michigan game, the Nevada game. There's some things that he's 40% of the time at UNLV, it was off of play action, right? And so he's very, very much a rhythm passer. Most of his passes are underneath the 10 yards, middle of the field. Talking about getting to rhythm, Maiava is a rhythm guy, right? Everything's RPO. Like, he's going to be bringing stuff off of play action. He's got a cannon of an arm, though, and he can be accurate with the deep ball. There's a throw against Nevada. I actually have it up. I don't know if I can pull it up, but it's a money throw about 50 yards down the field. He has a cannon of an arm. Sometimes he throws too many fastballs over the middle and the receivers won't catch him. So I think it's just going to be scheming to his strengths as much as possible. And they just can't let the same issues that were happening with Miller Moss, you know, the turnovers and not taking advantage of the opportunities they're given. You know, Miller Moss, I think, had 10 interceptions and 24 turnover worthy plays. So it's just getting that out of there. And I don't think Jaden Maiava has to do too much. They have athletes on that team. Just let him comfortably come in and execute the offense and you know, build from that. But make sure that you also, you know, kind of get a run game going too, so you can build off of that.
Yeah. I agree a lot of that. My thing to avoid for them is to avoid just kind of the standard offense they've been running with Miller Moss. You have got to change things up. You made this change in the bye week, so that way you could try to change things up. I want to get Maiava on the move as much as I possibly can. He has the athleticism, he has the ability, and let's be honest, Lincoln Riley's offenses work best when the quarterback is not just standing in the pocket. Especially at this team with an offensive line that is questionable and a defensive line for Nebraska. I know people are kind of down on Nebraska a little bit, but you should not be down on this defensive line. It is still a very good defensive line that has given teams fits all season long. So this is a situation where you need to be trying to get Maiava out of the pocket. You know, some of these rollouts, some stuff like that. If you are going to have him in the pocket, you need to chip as much as possible on some of these edge players. You need to keep your running back. Woody Marks is a good pass blocker as a running back, so you need to be keeping him in a lot of the time and try to create some checkdowns somewhere else other than Woody Marks and what they've been doing there. So for me, like, get Maiava on the move and encourage some of the off platform plays and encourage some of the, you know, hey, if nothing's there, run for 2 or 3 yards. Do something to get positive yards. Stay on task or stay on schedule and do everything you can for that. So
yeah,
that's going to be the biggest thing I think USC is going to have to do. And I think this is going to be a really, really fun game to watch. I think that Nebraska is most likely going to win this game. My score prediction for them is going to be 28-24. I think it's going to be a pretty close game. I think Dana Holgorsen is going to throw some things at him. I wouldn't be surprised if Nebraska gets up early in this one, like 14-0 or something like that. You know, maybe Dana Holgorsen starts throwing some stuff at Deonton Lynn that he hasn't seen before. Maybe it's a little confused by the players, and I think that's really going to benefit them to get up that early. I think Maiava is going to be a little bit of a slow start. I think Tony White's going to be better for it. So at the end of the day, I just think Tony White's a better defensive coordinator than Deonton Lynn. I mean, no disrespect to Deonton Lynn. I think Tony White's one of the best defensive coordinators in the nation. So I like Lynn as well, but I really believe in Tony White and what they've been able to do this season. Even though maybe the numbers don't show it all the time, I still think it's been very good. What do you think, Justin?
Yeah, and to your point, Tony White, that's my key in this game too. Because Tony White, you know, for any time Nebraska has had an off game against Indiana, for instance, you know, they changed against Ohio State and they went to more of a bare front. You know, they were less susceptible on the inside. Every time Tony White's defense has gotten beaten, Illinois, for instance, he adjusts. And he responds, and they come out and they play well the next week. Both times that they've got exposed, that has happened. Tony White is a great coach. He's learning from the mistakes of this defense and is getting, you know, more and more of those reps under his belt in terms of, you know, molding his defense into a defense that can compete with, you know, all of these different styles of offense. And I got a very similar score. I'm going to give us a field goal, but I was going to go 28. I was going to go 28-24, but I want to change it up. So I'll give us a field goal. I'll go 31. I'll go 31-24, just so it's not the same score.
You don't want to give them two field goals? You want to do 27?
No. I don't want them to
miss extra point.
I just don't want them to be that close, personally. That's just more wishful thinking on my part. But yeah, I just Tony White, you got to get pressure on Maiava. And because on the film against Michigan, they got pressure on him a lot, and his eyes go down a lot, and he stops looking at the field. Occasionally, he will keep his eyes up, but a lot of times his eyes goes down, and that's not good for a quarterback.
Yep, got to be watching that front of the helmet there and see what goes on there. So,
yep.
And this is what I was talking about, John, was Tony White, great DC. Indiana scored 56 on him. Like I said,
the defense gave up in that game. They admitted they gave up. They were like, right. We quit. We quit on ourselves.
Right. And also, too, I mean, you also have to look at the turnovers and how many times Matt Rhule have gone for it on fourth down and stuff like that. So, yes, you do make a point, John. 56 points is not exactly a good record on any defensive coordinator, but I think there's context to that one, and I think you've seen enough good play from the defense throughout the year to say that was out of the ordinary. That's not something I'm going to say happened a lot this season, right?
We've seen so way more consistent good from his defenses and a few outlier bads, and everybody just wants to point at those and say, oh, he's bad. I Indiana fans will hate that I say this, but that score wasn't as bad as, you know, I don't think Nebraska got beat as bad as that score indicated. I just think Indiana was so efficient that it just turned into that. Nebraska was the opposite of efficient, turning the ball over the red zone. They threw a pick in the end zone that went the other way over to the other side of the field. You know, it's just self-inflicted mistakes and they just lost all the by halftime that defense just quit. Like I said, the players came out and admitted it. So we gave up.
Right. It's not taking anything away from Indiana. Indiana did
exactly they're incredible. They beat the crap out of us. They would have won that game regardless. I mean, they beat the brakes off of us, but
I don't think they would have scored 56 if you know, there's some better decision making, but still,
nuance matters. But I think it would have been a closer game, but the way Nebraska was just inconsistent offense, and Indiana's offense, man, they were attacking the outsides, and before that game, they were attacking the middle of the field. And I think that's what they did different against Nebraska, is they were attacking the sidelines a bit more. And I think Nebraska was ready for that.
Yeah. I pointed that out in that game, was they attacked the middle of the field against Maryland and it paid against them, and they needed to find a different way. Cause I didn't think you'd do that against Nebraska. And lo and behold, Kirksen is a good coach and he figured it out. Who would have thought?
Yeah. Right.
All right, well, let's move on to Oregon, Wisconsin. This is a game that we were asked to talk about earlier. Well, we were scheduled to talk about it already. No worries. So, Oregon and Wisconsin in this one. I think obviously Oregon is the favorite in this one, and I think that, you know, most, I mean, I don't think there's gonna be very many people that pick against Oregon in this one. They're favored by 14.5. The over under is 50.5 in this one, but I do think there is a lot to think about in this one, and there are a lot of things that Oregon's gonna have to avoid, because I honestly believe if Oregon comes out and plays a B level game in this one and Wisconsin plays to their best of their ability, Wisconsin will win. Right? I mean, for me, Oregon cannot sleep on Wisconsin. This is not Purdue that you're playing here. This is not some cupcake team that you can just stroll in there and take care of business. Honestly, like, Oregon hasn't really had a whole lot of road tests this season. Really, their only tough road environment they've been in was against Michigan, and it did rattle them a little bit. Now, they did what number one team in the nation is supposed to do. They still won by 21 points, but there was a little bit of concern at one point in that game where Michigan could possibly do something. They obviously didn't. Give credit to Oregon, but I still think that makes this game a little bit more to talk about. So, Justin, we'll let you go first. What's your thing that Oregon has to avoid in this game?
Not getting penalties. They had their worst game in terms of penalties last week, 12 for 95 yards.
Yeah.
12 for 95 yards. And that is one of the ways that you're going to keep a team like Wisconsin in this game and potentially set up for an upset. You just can't beat yourself. And so they got to clean that up. I mean, 12 penalties for 95 yards. That is around what lost USC the game against Minnesota. And it wasn't even as bad as that. And so that, you know, Oregon was good enough to outlast that, but they don't want to keep doing that week after week. And especially, you know, as you kind of get towards this end of the season, those execution issues need to get cleaned up, and that needs to start against this Wisconsin team that they should beat.
Yeah, I agree. I think for me with Oregon, it goes into the penalties, but it also goes into some special teams area as well. Just don't get sloppy, right? Avoid the sloppy play. Come out, play a really, really good game. You know, look sharp in this one. This is probably their last big test of the season. Obviously, Washington's rivalry game, that's going to be a test in itself, but this is probably the most dangerous situation, I think, that Oregon is going to be in for the rest of the season. Don't get so sloppy with the penalties. Don't give up so many firsts. It felt like almost every single penalty was a first down for Maryland in that one, which was really beneficial to them. But they also had their second game in a row with a muffed punt. Now, Oregon did fall on that one. That was helpful, but we saw what happened against Michigan. That kind of gave Michigan life when they muffed that punt. And honestly, Maryland probably would have had even more life if they had picked up that punt. So secure the ball. And, you know, don't get sloppy. And another big thing, this isn't so much my thing to avoid, but they got to find another target on third down with Tess Johnson out. I mean, they have a whole lot of, they have a whole lot of dangerous playmakers out there, but Tess Johnson's no longer there. He had 60 some catches when he left for the season, and they're going to have to do their very best to try and figure out, is it Tarrant Ferguson? Is it Evan Stewart? Whoever it is, find that guy for the rest of the season that you can rely on. Absolutely. Justin, we've got a big fan here in the chat, Sonny Verma, two of the most
handsome what's up, Sonny?
College football right here. Yeah. We appreciate it, Sonny. If it'd be three of the most handsome men if you were here, man.
Yeah, no. Where are you at, buddy? Come on, hop in here. We're talking to Illinois.
Sonny, I think Sonny's gonna be on a basketball episode next Thursday, he said. So don't worry, we'll have another
check
one
it out. Here. I'll check it out.
Yeah, there we go. All right, so let's move over to Wisconsin now, Justin. What do they need to avoid in order to win this game?
Can't turn the ball over. Braden Locke threw two picks last week. One touchdown, two picks. I mean, they're going to have to be plus in the turnover margin, in my opinion, to have any opportunity to come close to winning this game. So, yeah, it's just going to come down to don't turn the ball over. That's been their kryptonite when they start throwing the ball.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And that turnover they had for against Penn State, that was kind of like the game-changing moment, right? Drew Aller wasn't in the game anymore, and Bo Prabula, I mean, they were moving the ball a little bit, but they were kind of struggling. And then once they got that turnover, Penn State scored, obviously, on the pick six, and kind of just went on from there. So the offense came alive for Penn State, so you can't let that happen. For me, the biggest thing that they need to avoid is trying to drop back and throw too much. I feel like Wisconsin has done this too much with Braden Locke. I feel like he is a much better, the numbers suggest he's a much better passer off of play action rather than just straight drop backs. And you have got to be running the ball well. Oregon has had struggles with the run defense a little bit this season, here and there. It's not been super evident, but you could capitalize on that if things are going well. So run the ball well with Tywee Walker, get Cade Yaka Mara, whoever, how you pronounce his name, I apologize, but get him out there as well. Have some him get some big runs, and overall, get Braden Locke dealing. Don't be too conservative. Throw some deep balls off of play action as well. You know, try to get those receivers involved. Vinny Anthony has been one of them. Will Pauling, try to get those guys involved with the deep balls. So, Justin, your score prediction in this one, who do you have winning? Oregon, Wisconsin.
Oregon 35, Wisconsin 14.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's going to be tough for Wisconsin in this one to win. I do see a path for it to happen, but I'm actually going to go a little bit closer. I'm going to go 31-17 Oregon in this one. So, but road test, it's going to be an interesting one to see.
Yep, so. Will.
All right, Justin, let's get to our final topic here. All right, so there's been a lot of chatter this week ever since the Ohio State game. It started with the Penn State wideout game, or not wideout game, the Penn State game being at noon against Ohio State. So do you like Big Ten kickoffs? Ohio State fans, Penn State fans are very frustrated right now. And for some people, it's like, this is trivial. Why are you complaining about this? Ohio State does end the season on 6 straight noon games. 5 of those 6 are big noon kickoff. I think the first of those was the Nebraska Ohio State game. Meanwhile, Michigan State is begging for anything but a night game. They've played so many night games so far this season. So everybody's feeling a little indifferent about the scheduling so far, I think. But what's your thoughts on these big noon kickoffs and some of the drama that's kind of gone around that?
So I understand, like, I saw Joe Klatt tweet about this earlier, and he's talking about, it's watched by so many people and all this, it's this big window. If it was bad for college football, I'd say it, whatever. But it's good for what, but all that tells me is it's good for TV, right? It's good for them to be able to get viewership. It's good for Fox. But I don't necessarily think it's good for the fans. You know, it just, there's something about, the primetime games between the best teams that just kind of, it's just synonymous with primetime. You know what I'm saying? Like the best teams playing at night in primetime under the lights, the crowd's more electric. I just think giving good teams the opportunity to be able to play in those big game moments, I think some of that's being taken away by this big noon kickoff. And you got teams like you're talking about that are just scheduled for so many of them that it's just like, can you throw us a bone here every now and then? And like, understand that you got to give a juxtaposition and give a balance to fans and what they want and networks and what they want. But the problem is right now is it's money, and Fox and the Big Ten had this in their agreement. So it is what it is. You know, at the end of the day, the Big Ten wanted this, Fox wanted it. That's what gives them money. And that's what, the Big Ten is. That's what college football is now. It's money. And so, unfortunately, I don't think it's good for the fans, but it's good for the networks. And, at that point, it is what it is. We're against the machine in that regard.
Totally. I see where Joel Klatt is coming from to an extent, right? I mean, they were trying to revitalize this noon window that had hardly any good games in it for years, right? I mean, this was a window that never really had any big games, but there was a reason why. It's because nobody was putting primetime games on that time slot because the viewership wasn't great. Exactly. Lo and behold, you put big games on there now. The viewership does get better. I think Texas, Michigan did 9 million some, which is good, but you also see the SEC putting out like 13 million TV ratings once or twice a year on ABC, ESPN, some of those networks. And so for me, like, I get where big noon is coming from, trying to put these games out there and help themselves a little bit, but like at the end of the day, if you're confident in what you have, you should be willing to go up against the SEC, right? I mean, we saw a night game between Ohio State and Oregon. It was one of the most watched games of the year, right? I mean, and there were other SEC games that night as well. It wasn't like there was Georgia, Alabama or anything like that, but still, there were other SEC games to watch that night as well. And the Big Ten still did well because it was two of the Big Ten's premier products. I mean, Justin, imagine if Ohio State and Nebraska had played each other at big noon and we had the situation we thought where Nebraska was undefeated going against Ohio State. So there were a lot of people talking about that possibility, and Nebraska was not bad. I mean, they were what, 5-3 when they were facing Ohio State, kind of on the brink, or 5-2.
Two.
They were kind of on the brink of being ranked a little bit. They had been ranked earlier in the year. They could get back to being ranked. And so that was a game with a lot of viewership. But I couldn't imagine if they had Ohio State, Nebraska at noon, and it was 7-0 versus, or 6-1 versus 7-0 in that one. Like, that would have been fans yep. would have been upset for sure.
Oh, 100%. Because that, I mean, it's two huge, huge, huge fan base viewerships. Yeah, absolutely. That would have, I wouldn't have been happy with that. And two, because I'm in Arizona. Like now everybody around me does daylight savings, but before that, I'm 2 hours ahead. So mm-hmm. morning games are very morning for me, you know? Right. So
yeah,
that's another reason I like it.
I get where some people are coming from. We got Terry who says, I like not having to wait to see my team play. You know, Terry, I agree with you personally as a fan who watches at home. Listen, I don't live in Ohio, so I don't go to as many Ohio State games as those who other fans that do. But I also don't like watching the game where it feels like the crowd is dead the entire game, right? Yeah. And then you start comparing it to the other games where you're like, oh my gosh, look at what Nebraska has at their night games. Look at what Oregon has at their night games. And you're like, and we got
it people sucks coming waiting.
Still sipping coffee, you know?
Yeah, I think we can all admit it sucks waiting till night. But
right.
At the end of the day, it's for the best. And you get the most eyes on you. The recruits are watching you. You know, majority of the recruits are going to be watching the primetime games most likely. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there's a lot of things that I think are cons to it, but, and most of the pros mainly benefit, the networks, but there are a couple of things like that. You know, you don't have to wait to watch your team play. You know, when I'm out, even at Nebraska in Lincoln for the games, I'm like, if it's a night game, I'm like, I kind of wish it was earlier, 'cause I'm ready to get in there and go crazy. But then when I get to the night atmosphere, I'm like, yeah, never mind.
Yeah.
We're in
And as an Ohio State fan, I've been kind of focusing in on the big noons a little bit more just because that's kind of the trending topic for Ohio State fans right now. But I do think there is a conversation as well, and this has been affecting the Penn State fans more, is the broadcast they had for the whiteout on Peacock. Listen.
Oh my God.
I appreciate that NBC believed enough in the Big Ten to try and revive, you know, try to build their Peacock product off of it. You know, I'm not trying to complain that somebody believed in the Big Ten and spent money on it, but we cannot be putting the whiteout on Peacock, especially when you are going to present the whiteout the way you presented it. We saw hardly any crowd shots. We saw hardly any of the light show. I mean, they did not
the service.
They did a disservice to it. You didn't see the fans in the stands on the you know, on the front row and some of that stuff that was going on. I mean, I saw better pictures and I saw better shots of the game in the photo gallery after the game than I did on TV.
And Penn State's Twitter.
Penn State's Twitter.
Because I mean, they did a good job of it. Yeah.
I forget what year that was. Was it 17 or 18 when I think it was ESPN had the wideout for some reason. I forget who they were playing, but ESPN, as much grief as I give ESPN, and I don't like ESPN, okay? But as much grief as I give them, that was one of the most perfect productions.
Yeah, their production's good.
Of the wideout, yeah, that I had ever seen. And I still play that clip on Twitter from time to time. If I can find it again, I'll do that. But for me, like, yes, big noon. You know, for Ohio State fans and Penn State fans right now, it's a big deal. But even for, like, Indiana fans right now, I would think you would have liked what you saw in the Michigan-Indiana game with, you know, the bright as you started the game. And then kind of as the game got closer into it, it got darker. And you felt that kind of feel of all that was going on. And I saw people taking pictures and showing the video. Guess how many videos and pictures they showed at the beginning of the game versus the end of the game. Whole lot more at the end of the game because that's the feel, right?
That's when it starts to become an issue, is when those games are so big for those schools, right? And then it starts to kind of hurt the university in a little bit of a way, because Penn State needs to showcase those whiteout games. Again, recruits watch these games, recruits see what's going on. The national, you know, more people are being drawn to college football. Like, put these on display and bring people to the sport. Stop, you know, hiding them on Peacock. And like you said, Peacock is completely unprepared. Their production team is handling this like it's Purdue versus, you know, UCLA. I'm sorry. No, I'm not trying to, they beat us. I get it. But I just, the first thing popped in my head. But that's how they're treating it. You know, it's preposterous to me how you have a production crew of that level and they can't figure that out. But yeah, it was pretty bad, pretty bad.
Yeah. Yeah. Cameron, we appreciate you being here. He says, as an Ohio State fan, gotta love our only primetime game was at home versus Western Michigan this
crazy.
Year. Yeah, Ohio State played three night games this year, Oregon, Michigan State, and Western Michigan. Western Michigan was the only home game. Now, I will say, I've not had this confirmed, but from what I've heard, Gene Smith, the previous athletic director for Ohio State, did want to prevent 7:30 kickoffs at Ohio State because of how cold it got. I think that's bogus. For me, I'm not looking all at, you know,
that's advantageous for Ohio State against some of these other teams, right?
They should
love that.
Exactly. I mean, I still think like a 3:30 kick for like an Indiana game would be really cool, especially with what Indiana has become this year and how big of a game that's going to be. That's going to be a top five matchup in both the AP poll and the college football playoffs, you know, as long as everything happens, you know, okay this weekend. But that's going to be very disheartening, I think, for a lot of the fans who are going to that game. And I think most Indiana fans would agree that, you know, maybe it's not disheartening for them, but yeah, it'd probably be cooler to go see the game at night than it would be at noon.
It's a hell of an experience, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, Justin, we have kept you 15 minutes afterwards, so we really appreciate your time. We'll let you get going here, but before you do, please tell everybody about the Nebraska Voice of College Football and what they can find over there.
Yeah. Like you said, Nebraska Football at the Voice of College Football. I'm coming up on 6,000 subscribers. You know, if you do want to go check out my live stream, I did a live stream about an hour before I came on here, and I broke down USC versus Nebraska, Jordan Mayava with film from UNLV and a lot of that stuff. So if any Husker fans, USC fans are in here, want to go check that out, you know, go ahead, slide over there, check that out. But appreciate you having me on, man. Enjoy talking. It's always a good time.
Yeah, we totally appreciate it, Justin. Always welcome here on the Big Ten Huddle. We definitely have a good relationship with the Voice of College Football as well. So, you know, you might see me and Justin do some work over there sometimes too.
Yes,
so,
sir.
Hey, everybody, come back for the basketball episode Thursday night. We're going to have a whole lot of fun there. Zach will be back, I think, Sunday. He might come back Saturday with the power rankings. I can't remember for sure, but I think he'll be back Sunday. We'll interact with the chat a whole lot more. I know that, you know, we haven't done a great job of interacting with the chat these past two episodes. I've been trying not to keep Justin and Jeffrey for 2 hours like Zach and I sometimes do, because, you know, they got lives outside of this. Zach and I don't have lives. We just
neither do I really, but my wife is like,
I got to start paying you if we go over an hour and a half. Anyway. So, you know.
All right. Well, you're 15 minutes over, so that's going to be $50. I'm charging.
All right.
Now.
We'll talk about that later. So,
start donating super chats. Let's go.
Yeah. Do the super, thanks on the comment section. All right, everybody. Really appreciate it. Kent will be back for sure on Saturday night for a Power Rankings episode. You'll catch that after the very last game for Big Ten. And we'll be back again, like I said, Sunday night for a recap episode. Appreciate you all being here. Have a good one.